L'abonné que vous désirez joindre préfère ne pas recevoir d'appel en ce moment. The party you are trying to reach has chosen not to take calls at this time.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined by Kyle.
Hi.
And out in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And no doubt with a microphone challenge, we have Alex.
Yes, you do. Good evening.
Well, today you sound a bit tinny, but other than that, you're coming through loud and clear, so... Where are you, Alex?
Well, that's good. I am, it's 1 a.m. here, so it's very late. That's why it's so dark for you guys and for all of our listeners. And I am off the coast of Spain in one of the Balearic Islands known as Menorca. So I'm on the southern coast of Menorca at the moment on vacation.
Are you fleeing from something, or is this just a getaway?
No. Surprisingly not. No, it's just a bit of a getaway. I've been on vacation for a little bit now, and started off in London, and we're over in the south of France for a bit, and over in Monaco, which of course is its own country, and now we went over to Marseille, and we're spending about a week or so in Menorca, then heading over to Italy for a little bit, and then back to New York.
Well, so, we look forward to your return.
Yes, yeah, so do I. It'll be nice to be back, but I will tell you, this is a very extraordinary place. I've never been anywhere like this. It's amazing. It's dotted with these prehistoric settlements that are shrouded in mystery here. Nobody really knows about these people that lived here around 4,000 years ago, but yet their settlements are still dotted around the island. It's a fascinating place. It's absolutely gorgeous in terms of these coves and these waterways. People are nice, food is amazing, and the sun is hot. So I've been definitely enjoying it.
Well, the sun is hot here too as well. In fact, we're in the middle of a heat wave here in New York, and Kyle and I are back from our travels out west. We were in Seattle last week, and back in New York. It's good to be back. Good to see everybody again. But once again, we were met with a bit of sadness on our return. We've mentioned this before on the radio show, and it's been mentioned throughout the New York City area, because it really is a big deal. It really is a huge deal to those of us in radio, those of us who listen to the radio, those of us who are New Yorkers. And I'm referring, of course, to the loss of yet another radio station, WCBS News Radio 88, station I grew up on, station many of us grew up on. And it's gone. It's gone. As of Sunday night, basically was converted into yet another all-sports station. We now have five of them in New York City. Apparently there wasn't room for two all-news stations, but there's room for five all-sports stations. I don't know what's happening to this country. I wanted to share the last moments because I fear a lot of people may not have heard this, and it really, it does say something that I think we all need to hear. What I found to be particularly interesting, Kyle, you and I were listening to this as it was airing on a portable radio, which is, as you know, the way you're supposed to do it with an AM radio. Even though we're many miles away from New York City, the signal still came in, and a Sunday night gathered around the radio, it just seems so old school.
Oh, absolutely, but that was worth in reminiscing. And I mean, I think of the countless times I've stumbled upon it from afar,
mm-hmm.
Overnight when the signal reaches great distance, scanning around. We've heard this beacon from the city, and now that signal will not be transmitting quite as much information.
That signal,
or just different information.
It'll be transmitting the same sports talk that you can hear on a dozen other stations on the band. So it's nothing unique. But you know, when we were traveling, let's say we were in Louisiana or Florida or Chicago at night, due to a phenomenon known as skywave interference on AM, you can hear distant radio stations. And we would tune to 880. I've been doing this since I was a kid, tuning into that station to hear the sounds of New York, to hear familiar voices, to hear what's going on locally, even though we may not be local at the moment. It was a tremendous comfort. And I really think the owners of that station underestimated how much that station meant to New Yorkers. Because, you know, I talked to so many people from all different backgrounds, and everybody is mourning its loss.
Yeah, and I think locally a lot of people might recognize its presence during inclement weather or like hazardous conditions.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you would sort of coalesce and find out just facts, you know, news about what's going on with a storm or aftermath in your area.
9/11, like plane crashes, all kinds of crises, elections, things like that. That was where you went. It was the backbone of New York City. I don't hesitate to say that because it was something that was always there, 24 hours a day, always with familiar voices telling you just what's going on. Anyway, one of those familiar voices is named Wayne Cabot. He was the last voice on the air. He was a familiar voice to many of us who listened to WCBS. I'd like to play the last couple of minutes of WCBS before it went silent forever.
All of us here knew that our audience is engaged and smart, and we need to treat our audience with the respect that a well-informed, well-educated news consumer deserves. That's right, deserves. Our news desert is getting bigger and drier. And just like we should get a second medical opinion, we need to seek out more and more varied news sources that we trust, because getting your information without the bias and brainwashing in one place has given way to a fight to stay informed. With each closing newspaper, radio newsroom, TV newsroom, magazine, and now even digital news operations, the country we love is diminished. So as we leave the news ecosystem after 57 years of all news and 100 years of service on New York radio, we implore you to find that next trusted source. Use it, support it, in word and deed. It is the most patriotic thing you can do, and the most satisfying. To paraphrase a CBS News legend, good night and good luck. You will ask, why does this radio station mean so much? Why is the reaction the way it is? And I really can't speak for others. I can speak for myself. My parents split when I was 11. We split Christmas, and when I was at Dad's house, he gave me a clock. And this one had a beam at the top that shined the time onto the ceiling. I wanted to make sure it was set correctly, so I went to the station I heard in the back of the car, WCBS, to make sure the time was exactly right. And I listened and listened, and before long, I became hooked as a 12, 13-year-old. When I was 14, my dad drove me to the radio station in New York City during morning rush hour traffic, and he introduced me to the place I'm now signing off in 2024. Ray Martell, here's your last request. Chris Olivero, Ben Meverek, Ivan Lee, our bosses pushed for and got the authority to let us have our goodbyes, to have a last show. That's something very rare. I thank them for that. And I thank my dad for driving me into New York City in 1978. Parents, you never know what impact these random acts of love and attention may have on your children. I'm Wayne Cabot, and for the final time, this is WCBS. New York.
And they were gone. It chokes me up just hearing that every time. It's one of the most moving moments in radio I can recall, and so sad, so very sad. It's a radio station, but those of us in radio understand the importance of having a voice, having a place that you can tune to and hear what is going on. Unfortunately, with companies owning multiple radio stations and not understanding exactly
WHSQ and WCBS okay. FM.
That's the replacement station signed on after about a minute of silence. All sports now, all sports forever and ever. These companies, they take over and they don't get it. They don't understand what radio is. They don't understand the allegiance that listeners have. We get that here at WBAI. And in fact, you know, I talk about this often, where WBAI has survived through so many format changes. I think I went through all the FM stations a number of years ago. But now, I dare say that includes AM stations as well. I never thought a station like WCBS would disappear, but it's gone, and we're still here. And, you know, that means something. That means something to our listeners. That means something to us as an entity. And it's really why you need to hold on to these things, not let them go. Remember the idiots who tried to shut us down a couple of years ago? There are always forces out there that don't understand what the relationship is between a radio station and its audience. And they just look for the bottom line. They just look for something that makes sense to them business-wise. But, you know, the listeners are the ones who suffer. And I dare say in this particular case, that is exactly what happened. I was wondering, any of you guys listened to that last broadcast or were aware of it? Rob?
I was aware it was happening. I didn't listen to it live, but I'm glad you played the clip, because I felt bad about missing that. And as a New Yorker, I grew up with WCBS. It was where you went. It got my family and I through so many hurricanes, blackouts, the September 11th attacks, and just mundane days as well. It was always there. It was a mainstay. And it's always strange when something so interwoven with your media environment is no longer there. You don't really think about what it would be like to not have something like that until you don't.
Yeah, they did play the Joni Mitchell song, by the way. You don't know what you've got until it's gone. But it's so true. It really is true. And just to make it clear here, this is not an anti-change rant. Change is often good. Often it's the best thing. But so are the consistent things, the traditions, the steadiness. And sometimes those are cast aside way too easily, and we don't think about what the effects of losing these important traditions is. It might make sense for the moment, but, you know, to me it doesn't make any sense, because the station was turned over to ESPN. Do they not know that there already is an ESPN station on the AM dial? There already is one. Now there are two. Two ESPN stations on the AM and a third one on FM. And they also have another sports station, WFAN, which is owned by the same people who own WCBS, but is not affiliated with ESPN, and an FM version of that. It's ridiculous. You know, we're sports crazy. We really are. Don't tell me that there isn't room for two all-news stations in New York City. There's a lot of news out there. There is so much news. There's no way you could cover it all. Look, here at BAI, we always find something to talk about because there is no shortage of content. We get that here. That's why we survive, because there aren't any commercial entities breathing down our necks telling us you've got to, you know, make this amount of money in the next commercial break or else, well, we're going to change to country music. No, it doesn't work that way in non-commercial radio. Commercial radio, unfortunately, doesn't get that. And that's why you have tragedies like this, like the loss of an important station. You know, you always want to see things like, you know, the New York Times. You always want to see the next issue of that. You know, you always want to hear Mr. Softy coming around the corner. These are old things. These are traditions. And you might be able to streamline it and make it better and make more money off of it. But is that really an improvement? And the radio dial is poorer today as a result.
I think that's a great lesson, too, for the, like, ideas and sort of being the standard bearer, the mainstay, as Rob put it, that, you know, it takes, there's, we do what we do here at WBAI, and there is a lot of effort that it takes to produce and have a diversity of views in that part of radio, but it's not enough. You know, there's, it's underfunded, and it takes, you know, good newsrooms and staffing, and there is a loss here from that commercial news effort. And if it's not viable, I think really should take an honest look at what is becoming, what the media landscape, what the various forms of media are becoming, with like a very realistic views.
And I think that's something Wayne Cabot was able to speak to in those final moments of WCBS, something that I'm sure his bosses were nervous about him even saying in the first place, about how newsrooms are being shuttered, newspapers and even digital media, we're seeing it there too. And it results in just maybe a single voice or something that is disinformation.
Or, disinformation in that standard bearer not being there. You have entities that can acquire it and manage it at a certain scale, but do they adhere to the same sorts of journalistic integrity and standards? And what is their mission in any way,
right,
an approximation of what is lost? And that's so glaring in these moments.
You become better by comparing yourself to that which came before you. And that doesn't always mean that you wipe away what came before you. Sometimes you coexist. Do we really want to see 60 Minutes disappear? Do we really want to not see new sources of investigative news reporting? We want to see both. We want to see the old exist with the new. Go ahead, Rob. You had a point?
Yeah. I think this just speaks to the state of commercial radio at this time, because one important factor of this change is that this wasn't a sale of the station. This wasn't a change of hands. The same massive company that owned the station before the changeover still owns it. They just decided we'd rather not spend the money on news, on, you know, supporting a newsroom, supporting journalism. Let's just throw this other stuff on there. And, you know, that's how we're going to make our money from now on.
Well, it's interesting you say that. It's called LMA. It's like a lease. In fact, there was pressure for WBAI to do that a number of years ago. Fortunately, we didn't do that. But what that means is another entity takes over your programming. You still retain the license, but they are actually in charge of what goes out over the air. So, yeah, this does expire at some point. In fact, one of the all-sports stations, 98.7, one of the ESPN stations, they have an LMA that expires at the end of this month, and that station is going to change formats to something else. So it's possible 880 could come back someday. You know, I don't hold out much hope based on the mentality of people who own these places. You know, it bugged me from the start when I heard that WINS, the other all-news station, and WCBS were owned by the same company called, it's pronounced Odyssey. It's not spelled Odyssey. It looks like Audacity, but it's not that either. They made up a word because they couldn't think of a word. That's what we're dealing with here. But, you know, to have both of the all-news stations run by owned and run by the same company, that was a problem. But it wasn't a problem that there wasn't enough news. It was a problem that one entity was running both of them. And this is the result of that. One company should not own competing radio stations. That should be different companies. And I think that's the problem here. But, you know, and Alex, I'd like to speak to this with you because you've been to London many times. London is the place where I see the old and the new together. And people seem to really get that. You know, I can go to London in 20 years and it'll be recognizable, but there will be a lot of new technology, a lot of advancements. And I think this is true of the UK in general. They hold on to tradition. And sometimes it's bad tradition, sometimes it's good tradition, but it always results in knowing a little bit about history and not just going blindly into the future. Do you feel the same way?
I think so. I think I do, and I think we see that a lot with, you know, perhaps how the United Kingdom also treats the BBC as a news source and as some place where you can hopefully find some form of objective reporting that can be trusted over and over again. But you also see this on the streets with the London telephone boxes. You know, in New York, we have no traces of payphones left anymore. You know, we have these goddamn Link NYC kiosks everywhere that nobody really uses, that are eyesores.
They're getting bigger.
Yeah, these massive 5G antennas, like the one in the East Village. Have you seen this? Massive 5G antenna. They're horrible. And they have little kiosks at the bottom that are supposed to placate you, I suppose.
Yeah, and they're just giant screens blaring advertisements at you as you walk past. Just another space that used to belong to the public that is now being sold to advertisers, which is exactly what has happened with the radio station, with 8A. I mean, it's sad. I'm so glad that you played that clip, though, Emmanuel, because it was very emotional for me to hear that as well. I was wondering how they were going to sign off. And being over here in Europe for the last couple of weeks, it's been, it's been different. But I loved to hear what Wayne Cabot did. He talked about this diminishing number of objective news sources, and why that's a problem, and how you need to find that news source. You need to find that station. You need to find that constant on the dial and support it. And how he connected that to patriotism, I thought was particularly brilliant and so apt these days as well, because, you know, we need this well-informed populace to have a democracy. And we're losing that ability to maintain a well-informed populace that is not subject to the biases of one particular political tribe or another. And finding that station, making sure that you have it, that it's a constant in your life, someplace like WBAI where you can hear, and I think, you know, people would not be wrong to consider this station obviously to be a progressive station, a left-leaning station in many ways, but we do present viewpoints on both sides of the dial, and I hope that we have a lot of objective dialogue, and I think we have that on this show in particular.
I
like to think so too. I mean, this is why, you know, we fight and bicker a bit on the air and disagree about things.
We don't.
Exactly my point here. But I thought it was great. I really do. It was a great sign off. We're going to miss that station very, very, very much. And it reminds me, and I always hark back to this when we think about the jewel in the FM dial that WBAI is.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, almost 25 years ago now, we almost lost WBAI in a very similar manner.
We almost lost BAI 3 years ago, or whatever year that was. Yeah, it's always happening in one way or another.
Always happening, but it was such a threat 25 years ago when those corporate interests took over the Pacifica National Board, and the idea was to sell the license to a commercial entity. I mean, just think about what the last 25 years would be like without WBAI on the air. I think when it comes to supporting WBAI, we need to think about the next 25 years. And you know that's my plug. That's my weekly plug to support the station.
I think you nailed it though, as far as identifying what was being said in those final moments at WCBS, because it echoes what we say here at WBAI as well, and it shows how when you're in the business in whatever form, whether commercial or non-commercial, you get it. You get the fact that this is precious. This is something that is fragile and so important to democracy, the source of news, finding different voices and just educating yourself. And it's always a threat. It's always something that is on the verge of being wiped out, either politically or commercially. It's you know, there are so few people that have the privilege of speaking on New York City radio that I feel we all have this kind of brotherhood as far as just being in an experience together. So it's really a sad day. But as you say, WBAI is a jewel on the FM dial. And of course, we only exist because of our listeners. And we hope that you support us by going to give2wbai.org and pledging whatever you can afford. Pledge a huge amount so that we don't have to worry about this and can stay on the FM dial. Pledge, tell your rich friends and relatives to pledge to keep WBAI on the air and thriving. And it's so important. It really is. All right. We have other things to talk about tonight. And of course, we have overtime coming up afterwards on YouTube at 8 o'clock. And that is something that we haven't done in a while because, a lot of us have been away and it's been kind of crazy. But in the interim, since we've been away, what's happened? So Social Security numbers apparently have all been stolen. Yeah, I've seen this story many, many times now. I've seen all kinds of newspaper articles asking, was my Social Security number stolen? And how you can find out if your Social Security number was affected. And here at Off the Hook, we have the means for you to do that. And basically, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you have a Social Security number? You all nodding? Yes? Then your Social Security number was affected. That's it. That's all. And they were affected the moment you started giving them to people that were not part of Social Security. Now, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. You were told to do that. You were told to give it to the banks. You were told to give it to the phone company. Hell, I've been told to give it to volunteer organizations who are taking down your name and then just add Social Security number as something normal that people ask for. It's ridiculous. But it's supposed to be for Social Security. Well, it's not. And you didn't lose it. You didn't compromise it. The people you entrusted with it did. And this company, how many of you have heard of this? National Public Data. You know, the first few times I read the story, I just assumed it was National Public Radio for some reason. I don't know why they would have Social Security numbers. But no, National Public Data. Never heard of them before. But they're a background check company. They're owned by Jericho Pictures. This is all news to me. 2.9 billion personal records may have been exposed. And that's a lot more than there are people in the United States. Other reports suggest the amount of records leaked may have been more than 2.7 billion. It's an awful lot either way. In an official data breach notice filed in Maine, National Public Data indicated 1.3 million records may have been breached, said James E. Lee, chief operating officer at Identity Theft Resource Center, a nonprofit organization focused on mitigating risks of identity breaches and theft. It is entirely possible that it is that low. It's also entirely possible it's higher, they said, of the number of people affected. Now, the information breached may have included Social Security numbers, names, email addresses, phone numbers, mailing addresses. That's according to National Public Data, who states this on their website. A third-party bad actor may have hacked into the data in December with potential leaks of the information in April and over this summer. National Public Data did not return a request for comment by the Associated Press. Actually, I'm sorry, by CNBC. the question here is, can you be affected even if you've never heard of National Public Data? What kind of a question is that? If only ignorance kept you kept you safe. But yeah, I never heard of National Public Data, and yet I know that my number is likely affected. They are a background check company that provides information either through legitimate sources or by scraping it off the web. And because the data is collected more casually, it can be gathered without consumers' permission and outside of certain regulations. And as a result, it may be inaccurate or outdated. There's no easy way out of this one. You know, we can't all change our numbers. And I think it's a lesson in how data is vulnerable and how much we rely on these things. There is no way to really know if your number is being compromised or used against you, but it is yet another piece of digital information that's out there.
I think you can change your number.
You can, but we can't all change our numbers.
Well, I think you can all change your numbers too. And what I mean is, depending on who's asking, like if you think it's one of these goofy companies, like wrong-headedly asking you stuff that is really none of their business, certainly not public data, as is their namesake, why not pick one of the numbers and make it off by a couple?
Oh, I've done that.
You know, and just maybe, you know, it's one that looks like another number, something like that, and then see what happens. See if they're just outright collecting it or if they're actually running it through some kind of verification system.
See, I think they are. I think they're running it through a verification system. I did lie to the phone company once, and I got away with it, but I'm not sure I could do that today.
I would lie in as many places as possible, though.
I agree.
So it's wrong in as many of these pools of data collection, whatever business practices they have when they're selling or remarketing them or gaining something, some kind of insight. But I don't think, unless they can really cite some kind of regulation or something, why necessarily do you, what is the consequence of you failing this kind of check?
Okay, you raise a very good point, Kyle.
Who's going to be upset?
Well, that's the question, I suppose. Here's the fact. Credit agencies have this information. They have your SSN. They shouldn't. I think it should only be in the Social Security Administration, not credit agencies. But anyone who runs a credit check on you, whether you're applying for a credit card or loan or trying to get an apartment, they're going to look that up. And if the number doesn't match, they'll probably say something. But what I suggest, based on your words, is that people just make a little clerical error and reverse the last two numbers of their Social Security number whenever they are asked for it by a non-government agency. Obviously, you know, the IRS knows the SSN, the Social Security Agency, and they're going to expect to get that you get it right. But, you know, somebody that you're renting an apartment from maybe won't do that. So there's no reason to have your number out to everybody who asks for it. Go ahead, Rob.
So I did want to mention that there is a site that has been put up with a copy of the data that you can use to check to see if your information is in the breach.
And how do you check, pray tell?
You check by putting in your first and last names, the state you lived in, and your year of birth. And it'll search the database, and if you then see a list of places you have lived, then you're in there. Well, so,
isn't that true of everybody? I mean, whenever you get asked to verify your address, you're given a choice of four or five addresses, and one of them is one you lived in. So I assume that's the way it's supposed to be working. But how does that prove if your Social Security number has been compromised?
Because your Social Security is also shown in the results, but only the last two digits. The rest is asterisks to not put your full info on the screen, but it does let you know that the info is in there.
And presumably the other numbers are correct, but you don't know that for sure.
Not for sure.
So 1 in 100 chance they'll get that right.
Yeah, but I think we could give this address out for anyone who's ready to write it down. If not, we'll put this up on social media as well. The site is npd.pentester.com/search. That's N as in Nancy, P-D dot P-E-N-T-E-S-T-E-R www.alphabetsoup.com/search.
Okay, now and, with that alphabet soup of letters there, do we know anything about the people running this?
Yeah, they are a security company who have gotten hold of this and put up this tool.
I see. They've gotten a hold of it because it's that out there that people can just get a hold of it. That's kind of scary. That's kind of disheartening there. All right. Well, that's where we stand on that. Kyle, this might be of interest to you. I just stumbled upon this. You may not ride an electric bicycle, but that doesn't mean you're safe from hackers.
Oh?
This is a story in Forbes that wants to scare the crap out of you. Security researchers have revealed critical vulnerabilities that can enable a hacker to take control of the latest gear-shifting technology, changing or jamming gears from as far as 32 feet away. In their makeshift security analysis of Shimano DI2 wireless gear shifting in bicycles research paper presented during the Woot Conference on Offensive Technologies. Well, why don't I know about that conference? The Woot Conference on Offensive Technologies. And it spells Woot, too, if you look at the names there. That was presented earlier this month. Mary M. Madobighami, Anjan Ranganathan from Northeastern University, and Erlens Fernandez from UC San Diego addressed the potential security issues surrounding the use of wireless gear-shifting technology in modern bicycles. Okay, here's another example of why you don't have to make everything an app. You don't have to make everything wireless. Now people can shift your damn bicycle when you're riding it. I don't care if you're 32 feet away or 100 miles away. That's just not something we need.
The kicker is that these bicycles, I mean, if you're buying a bicycle with these components, you're probably spending a heck of a lot of money. And to fall victim to this could damage a lot of the components or put your life in grave danger if it's jammed up and you need to be moving. So, it is interesting because a lot of the higher tech multi-speed bikes employ this and sort of like any kind of... I think I noticed it first in cyclocomputers, which are the speedometer type things. Mm-hmm. You'd have like a little wire running down to a magnet in a lot of the older designs, and then they began to take those like little coin cell batteries and use like some kind of wireless scheme, and now that sort of evolved even into the shifting, to say nothing of powered bicycles.
But why? I don't tell me the advantage of this.
You're
on the bicycle, for God's sake. You can't shift.
Exactly. I guess because it uses less materials and there's a emphasis on weight. I don't know. They can make up all kinds of reasons why this is desirable. There's less sort of routing of a cable or a electrical wire to go from a little controller all the way back to where the actual wheel is. Maybe it could be susceptible to damage, so then it would be it would fail if the wires were exposed and not integrated, which takes more design planning.
You know, but it's that's life. Sometimes things break.
Okay? It's over engineering. Yeah, I mean it totally, like, and without coming up with a way to mitigate this or protect it from the sorts of interference or even like jamming. And I wonder if this comes up during big races and competitive stuff. Like, has this been employed for some sort of sabotage?
Well, no doubt it will be used as a target of sabotage. But it's yet another example of blindly diving into new technology that isn't needed. And it has a lot of disadvantages compared to whatever advantages it offers. See the same thing with cars. You know, you see the same thing with virtually any device where somebody feels it's necessary that this thing be connected to the internet, even though there's absolutely no reason it has to be. Look, at least give people the opportunity to completely opt out so that they don't have to deal with your experiments. You know, that's not that much to ask for. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty dubious about the Internet of Things stuff in general, but I realize that sometimes, okay, you'd like a remote control for your TV so you don't have to walk across the room and change a channel. You'd like to, you know, have Alexa or whatever start up your air conditioning so it's cool when you get home. But if you are too far away from the shifter on your bike to shift it manually, you are not on your bike and don't need to be shifting it.
Yes, but
Gila, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to admit something to all of you and to all of our listeners, and because this gets archived forever, uh-oh, I'm admitting it for posterity.
All right, there's no turning back. There's no turning back, Gila, so you sure?
I cannot shift gears. I never managed to do it effectively. I can only ride a one-speed bike. I can only drive an automatic transmission car. So I am willing to say that this sort of thing might come in handy for someone like me who never figured out the nuts and bolts of how to do the shifting myself. That might be helpful for one such as myself.
It's literally pulling a lever. It's just pushing on something.
The timing of it.
I would counterpoint you by saying, if you would like a digital solution to this, it could be in a little computer that is on the bike. It doesn't need to be online.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be open to online attacks. It doesn't need to, you know, have to deal with, you know, network security.
Oh, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, I'm also perfectly happy with a fixie. I'm kind of a hipster in that way. But no, there's no defensible explanation for something like this. I was just pointing out that I don't actually know how to shift gears on a bike or a car or anything else.
I think we can get you past this. You shifted the gears in this conversation, that's for sure.
There's no like reason really like to employ like common protocols without some kind of consideration for this, especially for systems that are supposed to be sort of, you know, the top of the line.
Right. Well, I don't know why it's top of the line. These are some of the dumbest things ever, things that you would not ever expect to do.
Well, this is like in the bells and whistles territory.
Yeah, sometimes you don't need bells and whistles.
Well, you should have a bell on your bicycle.
Definitely a bell.
Just to notify pedestrians.
Not controlled by somebody else. You can control the bell yourself. And Gila, if you can ring a bell on a bicycle, it's pretty much the same motion as shifting. But I'm not trying to shame you. I'm just saying that you probably can shift. You just haven't successfully done it yet. And, you know, what Rob says is correct. It can be done right there on the bike. Can be the equivalent of an automatic car, an automatic bike. It's certainly possible, and there are different ways. I mean, if it was just a button, you'd have no trouble doing that. You'd say, "I want to shift now." Press the button, and it would shift for you. Alex, we see you now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, you okay? Good. I was wondering. I guess I was off camera something, and it's weird here. It's the internet's a bit spotty. This whole thing seems totally insane to me. It sounds to me, I don't, well, first off, I'd like to know a little bit more about how the attack would work, but I think Kyle's on the right path here in that the protocol itself seems like it may have some kind of inherent vulnerability, and I would venture to guess that it would be susceptible to some kind of spoofing or replay attack so that you can send essentially what would amount to the same signal over to the bike. And let's say it would shift from fifth gear into first gear or something like that, where you could foul up the gears. And it seems particularly dangerous, too. I mean, perhaps you could set up some kind of gateway with a 32-foot attack vector that would go across the street. So you could say, you know, you could have this type of attack set up on 7th Avenue, and anybody riding one of these bikes would have their gears shifted back to first gear. If that's possible, that's really, really dangerous, because if you're moving at quite a clip, which these electric bicycles very often do, and then have your gears shifted on you down to a much lower gear, that could be extraordinarily dangerous.
You know,
and I will tell you one thing that I'm just saying
there are people in Manhattan that will sign up for that service to stop the delivery riders. You know, they complain that they go too fast. And pedestrians are endangered by them, so they'll say, "Yeah, that sounds good to me. Let's get them into first gear, make it mandatory, And yeah, people will be eager to do that, however wrong it is. Go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, no doubt. You know, and if this type of protocol, let's say, is then implemented more widely on electric bikes, like the city bike, electric bikes that we find all over the city, you know, then we have this widespread safety issue that could affect tens of thousands of people and becomes a real problem, because the one thing that I've found, being a denizen of Manhattan, is that these electronic bikes, and often in particular the city bikes, are operated mostly by idiots. So, that becomes a problem.
And people should also wear helmets. That's just my thing.
Yes.
And Kyle's as well. Nobody who rides a city bike wears a helmet. Why is that?
And they often have headphones in.
Yeah, that's not a helmet. That's not going to protect you at all.
Yeah, there's nothing cool about brain injuries.
No. Okay, so this story, I believe, Rob, you found this story from the Associated Press. Police officers are starting to use AI chatbots to write crime reports. Oh, boy. A body camera captured every word and bark uttered as Police Sergeant Matt Gilmore and his canine dog, Gunner, searched for a group of suspects for nearly an hour. Normally, the Oklahoma City Police Sergeant would grab his laptop and spend another 30 to 45 minutes writing up a report about the search, but this time he had artificial intelligence write the first draft. It pulled from all the sounds and radio chatter picked up by the microphone attached to Gilmore's body camera, and the AI tool churned out a report in 8 seconds. He said it was a better report than I could have ever written, and it was 100% accurate. It flowed better. It even documented a fact he didn't remember hearing, another officer's mention of the color of the car the suspects ran from. Oklahoma City's police department is one of a handful to experiment with AI chatbots to produce the first drafts of incident reports. Police officers who've tried it are enthused about the time-saving technology, while some prosecutors, police watchdogs, and legal scholars have concerns about how it could alter a fundamental document in the criminal justice system that plays a role in who gets prosecuted or imprisoned. It's built with the same technology as ChatGPT and sold by Axon, best known for developing the Taser. And as the dominant U.S. supplier of body cameras, it could become what Gilmore describes as another game changer for police work. Alex, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this also seems really, really problematic here. And it's a use of technology in a place where it shouldn't be used, because it can affect fundamental rights of people. If we think that ChatGPT-type technology, any of these GPTs or large language models, are essentially a very advanced form of predictive text, and that artificial intelligence is as we see it today, may look and feel a lot like actual intelligence, but it is nothing more than applied statistics. So we shouldn't be looking in the past at what words came naturally next to each other and generating police reports about incidents that just happened on the basis of statistics or some kind of analysis. It's really very, very troubling. It also seems like, another perhaps unpopular opinion in some circles would be that we very often don't find the brightest bulbs on the planet on police forces. And it seems like now that the barrier to entry to becoming a police officer has just gotten lower as well. And that to me is extraordinarily scary, because what we should be expecting of police officers is a full and comprehensive account that they themselves have created in a literate and logical and comprehensive manner. You know, and it seems like writing and literacy are perhaps now going to become afterthoughts when it comes to policing. That to me is the scariest part of the story that Rob found and shared.
I can't get over the fact that this is developed by the same people who make tasers. that's problematic for me.
Yeah, that's weird.
There's so many companies could be doing this, and that's the one they chose. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, this is amazing that this is even being considered as a thing that might have some possibility of being okay. It is so far from okay. First of all, if you're a police officer and you cannot write a report, I would say that is something to be very worried about. If the police officer cannot describe what just happened and what they did, how are they supposed to do that on the stand in court? And, you know, if they cannot write a full sentence that describes something, how is that supposed to, you know, to instill any confidence in the system? But also, as you said, this large language model stuff is computers guessing. And I do not need a legal account of something that just happened to me to be guessed at by a computer just because it read a bunch of other police reports. This is terrifying that anyone's even considering this.
And I think that to answer your question about appearing in court, I think somebody will push having the AI chatbot appear in court so that they can answer more succinctly the questions posed to them. We're moving into some scary days, folks. We definitely are. We need to stay awake and alert and pay close attention. That's super important. OTH@2600.com is our email address. And again, I want to encourage people to support this radio station where you hear these thoughts and many others throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the years. Go to give to WBAI.org. Give the number to WBAI.org and pledge whatever you can to keep WBAI going. It's super important. We are listener funded. We don't have commercials and we don't have people who don't understand radio about to switch our format to all sports. Hopefully. All right. We're going to continue the conversation over on Overtime. Go to 2600.com to see the link on the main page, and or just go to channel 2600 on YouTube, and you will find us there. And you should also find us back here again in a week. Good night, everyone. Give it to them. Today it's a trigger. So why is the Pope such a political figure? I don't know.